court's ready to hear argument in Freudenberg versus Five Revisions. Are you ready to proceed?
Mr. Justice Holland, fellow justices, I rise just to introduce my colleague Russell Beatty, a member of the Bar of New York, whose pro hoc admission you've already approved.
Welcome to the court.
Thank you.
The way our clock system works, I'm going to turn it on and you'll get your full 20 minutes shown. And when the clock switches from green to yellow, that will indicate your time you've reserved. You can continue speaking, but you will be using the time you've reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor. We present to the court a relatively straightforward contract provision requiring the parties to improve the products that were being used in this supply contract. The products were not satisfactory, did not perform satisfactorily. I think that's clear from even from the opinion below. The contract had many provisions relating to improvement of the product. It was not just a simple one clause somewhere saying the parties will do their best to make it work better and so on. The improvement provision works throughout the contract. It's in all three whereas clauses in the beginning. It's in 1.1. It's in 4.1.1. Throughout Article 5, 5.1, 5.4, 5.5, and 5.6. It is not as if this were a simple little subordinate clause which the court disregarded. The court disregarded in its determination a provision that was fundamental to the successful operation of the contract.
Mr. Beatty, there was, of course, a course of conduct between these parties in connection with the performance under this contract. And I think it is undisputed that there were rough spots along the way. And at some points, the I guess it was your client that was not exactly happy with the quality of the product that was shipped to it. Is there any document in the record in which your client, or which reflects that your client took the position that the manufacturer of this material had an ongoing contractual duty to improve the product and was in violation of that duty?
I think there is no document that asserts that right under the contract, Your Honor. However,
did your client ever take that position?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's what I was about to say. In the record, you'll find testimony from Mr. Casey, in which he went to Mr. Robinson, who was the head of Fiber Visions, the non-performing participant in the contract, pointed out the improvement clauses, and made, in practical effect, a demand for improvement, which in his view was the substitution of the Varta fiber or a Varta fiber product for the fiber product that was being given to Freudenberg at the time. And Mr. Robinson said, I'm not going to pay any extra cost for this contract. And if you look at the contract itself,
So before you get to the contract itself, what you just recited to me is testimony by your client's officer?
Yes.
Was that testimony controverted?
Not as far as I know, Your Honor. In fact, I think if you look at Mr. Robinson's testimony, I think you will see that he admits that there were complaints about the product and there was some demands by Freudenberg that the product be improved, but it wasn't.
Okay, and none of this back and forth was put into writing, though?
It was not, Your Honor. The citation for Mr. Casey's statement to Mr. Robinson and Mr. Robinson's refusal is line 28, page 18 of volume 1, Mr. Casey's testimony on July 20.
Is there any evidence in the record that the overall market was demanding the improvement of this particular fiber as opposed to your client for purposes of its own manufacturing process?
Yes, Your Honor. There is evidence in the record that there was not an overall market that could complain because this was a single client project which Freudenberg had undertaken for Procter & Gamble. Freudenberg's purpose, which is clear throughout the testimony, was that it wanted to become the dominant manufacturer of high-end surface material for hygiene products, for sanitary napkins, diapers, and other things that would be involved with sensitive parts of the human body. Their intention was to expand well beyond Procter & Gamble. But during the life of the contract, Procter & Gamble was their only client, their only customer, and they were barely able to satisfy Procter & Gamble's demands under the terms of the contract because the speed at which they could run their line was so slow compared to what they had anticipated.
Well, let me ask my question another way. Was this particular fiber supplied to any or sold to anyone else by the manufacturer of it?
We don't know. We made a discovery demand for records of transactions with other customers, including complaints for other customers, and the trial judge refused to give us the discovery, so we didn't know it. We don't know the answer to that question.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Just tell us if there's a distinction between improving a product and substituting another product, because there seems to be some suggestion. You say we should get an improved product, but it was really a product that they were doing in Europe as opposed to Georgia. And the other side seems to say, look, you made a contract to get what we were producing in Georgia and not what we were producing for other people in Europe. Is that really an issue in this case, that distinction?
No, Your Honor. The contract is quite clear. Everyone knew at the outset that the product to be supplied by Fiber Visions could not operate at 400 meters per second, which was the contract speed that had been committed to Procter & Gamble and which was in the agreement between Fiber Vision and Freudenberg. Everybody knew that the contract substance would have to be modified or changed or exchanged in some way. And if you look through the terms of the agreement, the court below basically said we contracted for T196 fiber and we were stuck with that and they didn't have a contractual obligation to give us anything else. That's not what the contract says. What the contract says in more than one place, in several whereas clauses and in 4.1 and other provisions, the contract says that the fiber must perform at 400 meters per second by certain and different speeds, lesser speeds, at earlier dates, and dates of performance, stepladder dates of performance are given in the contract.
So your focus is on the performance, and if they choose to try to discharge their obligation with T196, they had to be able to do it. But if they couldn't do the 400 meters per second with the T196, it was reasonable for you to request the Varta fiber.
Yes, right. It was particularly reasonable because Varta was owned by them. And therefore, the technology was available to them. The knowledge was available to them. It wasn't as if we came to them and said, we now want a rocket that will go to Saturn in 2 days.
But they would have to retrofit their Georgia plant, wouldn't they, in order to manufacture the Varta product?
Not a technical wizard on that, but let's assume that that's right.
Well, all the product from the Varta plant was called for already, wasn't it? That is, it was committed. So they could.
It was contractually committed, according to them. It was contractually committed to Varta's full capacity, and they couldn't get it from Europe, and they refused in any event because the shipping costs would have been severe. Our view was, and we all agreed, or at least they testified repeatedly, that the VARTA equipment was different and the VARTA raw material was different.
But in your
but that's why the contract has the provision in it that says the parties pay their own costs.
But in your brief, you do argue that it would have been commercially reasonable to make the substitution.
Absolutely.
And what's the basis for that argument?
The contract has a clause which defines commercially reasonable. It's paragraph 5.4, Your Honor. Commercially reasonable efforts are defined as the best possible result, making use of know-how, forming part of the state of science and technology. No limitation. It's anything that's already available and has already been invented, as well as their own knowledge and experience, BARDA. They get their knowledge, they get their experience from BARDA, they can do it. That's the definition of commercially reasonable efforts in the contract. When that provision was brought to the attention of Mr. Robinson after the test in the United States with the VARTA fiber, that's the time when he refused to incur the additional cost. And the next clause, 5.5, says, each party shall bear its own costs and expenses incurred in connection with the improvement of the products under this agreement. What could be more clear, Your Honor? They had the duty and the obligation. The trial court at least found, when the test was run in the United States between the VARTA fiber and the Covington fiber, it at least found that the VARTA fiber ran better. But it brushed that aside, saying in substance that we had contracted for the T196, and they didn't have a contractual obligation to give us the VARTA fiber. We
well,
agree.
Wait a minute. On that point, didn't the trial judge say he was not assured that the test protocols were scientific, the tests were run reliably, the results were dependable, nor that Freudenberg's interpretation of the results is correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and frankly, that's an interesting point because that's a place where the trial judge ran off the tracks, I'm afraid. If you look at the place where he did that, which is pages 30 and 31 in the opinion, and I can't recall the paragraph numbers, you'll see that he refers to the testimony of a Mr. Pedersen throughout. And he describes Mr. Pedersen as, quote, manager of Freudenberg's process technology group. And relying on Pedersen's testimony, he then defines the test in a pejorative way to show that it was not a randomized, double-blind, prospective, clinical trial with probability calculations to determine whether or not it was successful. There's only one little problem with that unreasonable description and, I believe, inaccurate description of the test. Mr. Pedersen was not an employee of Freudenberg. Mr. Pedersen was an executive employee of FiberVisions, the defendant. The test itself between the two fibers was described by Mr. Given in his testimony in Volume 1, July 18, pages 18, 101 to 108, and 118 to 125, and again by Mr. Casey, Volume 1, July 20, page 95, and pages 13 to 19. Quite a different description from the testimony of Mr. Pedersen, and it's not clear that Mr. Pedersen was actually present when the test was run. But both the FiberVision employees who testified, Mr. Given and Mr. Casey, were. And in fact, they both testified that the test was not, they gave a great deal more testimony than is reflected in the judge's opinion about cleaning the line, shutting it down, starting it over again, making sure that the test was a fair comparison, running the line for 12 hours, not 5 or 4. which is what the judge found.
Mr. Beatty.
Yes, sir.
As I understand it, the customer of Freudenberg had to sign off on a particular product and ended up signing off on T196. That's undisputed. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
Does the record show whether the customer had the opportunity to test out Varta, the Varta product, in that process?
It does not. But the answer is that the customer was aware of the test, and the comparative test, about which we speak at great length in our brief, was run at the insistence of Procter & Gamble, the customer, because they were dissatisfied with the product they were getting and with the rate of delivery.
I'm talking about at the outset, when the customer initially signed off on T196.
The answer is that it was aware of the fact that the Varta fiber existed, and it soon became aware of the fact of significant differences between the Varta fiber and the Covington fiber, but it was not aware of them at the time the contract was signed. The first test run was in Europe using Varta fiber, and the contract was signed, and then production runs began in the United States using Covington fiber, and that was when the problems arose. There was another run of Varta fiber in the United States when the Trichler executive, who was setting up the line for fiber visions for Freudenberg and making sure it worked, asked to have the leftover from the test in Europe sent to the United States so he could run it again. He did, and it worked better. And then Procter & Gamble asked for the test, which was run in 2002 and showed the fiber to be much better. I see that my initial time allocation is up, Your Honor, and if it's all right, I would like to reserve my time for rebuttal, unless the court has questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Philip Rovner from Potter Anderson and Caroon in Wilmington on behalf of the defendant, Pelley Fiber Visions. In listening to Mr. Beatty, it came to mind why we have certain procedural rules. We talk about the standard of review here. The standard of review in this case is one of whether Judge Silverman was clearly wrong. This is not a de novo review where the court misinterpreted or failed to interpret a provision of this contract. Freudenberg's first point in the summary of argument is, and the reason why they say they are entitled to de novo review, is that the Superior Court concluded that Fiber Visions had no obligation to improve the fiber it sold to Freudenberg. That's flat wrong. The court said at page 8, paragraph 21, that Fiber Visions was the contract in the product improvement provision, section 5.1, and it's entitled improvement. It says obliged Fiber Visions to use or adopt reasonably available technology and raw material to produce fiber for high speed and super high speed production. The court clearly recognized that there was a improvement provision. What Freudenberg misstates is that there was some general provision to improve the product. It was very clear what section 5.1 required. Fiber Visions, and I'm quoting from section 5.1 of the agreement, Fiber Visions shall use its best efforts to constantly improve the products such that they can be processed on a production line at the maximum speed of 400 meters per minute as of the date here and before. It was July 1st, 2003. That's very clear. It's not a general provision to improve the products. It is a best effort.
I'm not sure what you mean by a general provision to improve the products. It is a contractual provision.
To improve the products such that it can run at 400 meters per minute.
What in your side's view does that provision mean?
We're discussing speed of the line, the Freudenberg line, and quality of the finished product. The goal of the customer, Procter & Gamble, had nothing to do with the speed in which Freudenberg ran its line. It was they wanted quality top sheet. Freudenberg had an agreement with P&G. Prior Provisions wasn't a party to that agreement. Freudenberg apparently had some goals that they wanted to reach to make some money with their, out of their contract with P&G. Again, Fiber Visions knew nothing about that. In the contract, however, between Fiber Visions and Freudenberg, there was a best efforts provision to try to get Freudenberg's line running at 400 meters per minute with the Fiber Visions T196 fiber. That's what the requirement was specified in the contract.
Except that the provision talks about improving its products. It doesn't say that Fiber Visions, or is it Freudenberg, shall use its best efforts to apply T196 in a way that the production level will go up to 400 meters per second or whatever it is.
The agreement at Section 5.1 says best efforts to constantly improve the products such that they can be processed on the production line, Freudenberg's production line, at the maximum speed of 400 meters per minute.
Okay.
As of July 1st.
Right.
So
it doesn't say that, it says products. The contractual provision is not limited to T196.
Well, the product is defined as the fiber that was supplied. The T196 fiber was never specifically defined in the agreement. The parties then had a situation, a ramp-up period, where Freudenberg and Fiber Visions worked together to select the fiber that Freudenberg wanted to use and wanted to purchase on their line to make the top sheet. Freudenberg selected T196 fiber. And it's very interesting in the sense that what we're looking at in terms of a review, what Freudenberg would like this court to do is substitute Judge Silverman's view as to what commercially reasonable efforts entailed. What Judge Silverman concluded after a 6-day trial and a 52-page opinion, he said the contract, however, and I'm reading from the opinion at page 8, paragraph 21, in defining what contractually reasonable efforts meant, he said the contract, however, did not call for material from Varda nor for Varda-style fiber. And he said, nor did it require Fiber Visions to develop new processing methods at Fiber Visions' expense. What he meant was that he looked at all the evidence, including whether, in fact, the Varda fiber was any better. Freudenberg's position here before this court is the only way that Fiber Visions could meet its contractual obligation to use best efforts to improve its fiber so that they could run at 400 meters per minute was to supply Varda fiber or Varda-like fiber. The court, as Your Honor mentioned, concluded that the Varda test proved that it did not prove that it was better. In fact, all the evidence showed that the Varda fiber was no better.
Would it matter legally to your position if the Varda fiber were better?
Well, as a matter of law, no, it wouldn't. Because the contract provided, the court said that commercially reasonable efforts entailed certain things. It was not to replace, I'm trying to come up with a good analogy, they bought T196, but they wanted apparently Varda fiber. If Judge Silverman said if you wanted that, you should have bought that. Fiber Visions spent years working with Freudenberg to improve its fiber. There are many things that the specifications call for. Its length of fiber, its tenacity, its melt flow, all these different issues that Fiber Visions worked to improve the fiber. Those are the things that were called for. To change fiber in midstream was not only was it impractical, it would have violated the contract.
Well,
as your Honor mentioned, the P&G had to approve any change. In the contract, it specifically said, and it was mentioned in paragraph 6 of Judge Silverman's opinion, that they could not change the location. They had to get P&G's permission to change the location of the manufacturer from Fiber Visions Covington plant to Athens. There was no mention of Varda fiber at all. And Freudenberg, at the time of contracting, knew full well that there was something out there called Varda fiber. But in this situation, they made their best case. They went before the court and said, we've got a defective fiber case. Judge Silverman rejected that. And what he said was, the fiber was not defective. And I've heard Mr. Beatty say repeatedly that there were problems with the fiber and the fiber was defective. The court below ruled that the fiber was not defective. And that's the law of this case, and they have not appealed that decision.
Let's back up for a moment. As I understand the argument that's presented to us, it's very simple, and that is that your client had a contractual obligation to improve its products with the purpose that Freudenberg would be able to run its line at 400 at the 400 level. Your response is, and I think the Superior Court's response was, well, that may be, but products is not an all-encompassing term. Products means T-196. That's what you contracted for.
Yes.
What I'm asking you is walk me through the contract and show me how the judge got there.
Well, the contract had a provision that said that the Freudenberg and Fiber Visions will work together to pick a Fiber Visions fiber that they the Freudenberg will purchase. That was part of the agreement. They worked together to qualify a fiber, not only between Fiber Visions and Freudenberg, but to get approval from P&G. You just couldn't change it because Freudenberg, under the contract, couldn't one day say, you know what, give me T-192 fiber.
I'm sorry. I thought you told me that the word products was a defined term.
No, what I said was, sorry if I did say that, the products was defined as fiber. They then had to qualify the fiber, whether it would be T-196 or a different type of fiber made in Covington.
All right, and what you just told me, is that prescribed by some contractual language?
It's in the agreement of products.
I'm sorry, did you just describe what actually happened, or did you describe what the contract called for?
The contract called for products, that the products were to be defined later, and the products were defined later to be T-196. There was choices that the parties had to make, Fiber Visions and Freudenberg, all to be approved by Freudenberg's customer, P&G. And what the parties came up with, they tried a number of different fibers from Covington. The Covington location was specified in the contract. There's no getting around that.
Which contract?
The supply agreement at issue here between Freudenberg and Fiber Visions. The fiber must have been produced by Fiber Visions at its Covington, Georgia plant. The Covington, Georgia plant didn't produce Varta fiber. It produced various types of fiber, including T-196. There was a T-192 fiber that Freudenberg rejected beforehand.
Is it fair to say that were you and the other side come apart is in the definition of the word products?
Well,
for purposes of the improvement clause?
Well, the products were late. Our position
that's a
is
yes
that
or no. Did they disagree?
Yes, they disagree. They
okay.
believe that products couldn't entail something other than what was produced at Covington.
Okay.
And
how are we to resolve that?
Well, the contract is very clear that it talks about products. Those products must be made at the Covington, Georgia facility. The Covington, Georgia facility didn't produce certain fibers, including T-196, and I keep mentioning T-192 because T-192 fiber was tested before it was actually qualified on the Freudenberg line. The companies worked together to try to come up with a fiber that would run best.
Well,
it was
if the product evolves over time necessarily, it wouldn't have been produced at Covington before, right? I mean, this argument that it wasn't produced at Covington, therefore they had no obligation to supply it.
Well, T-196 was produced at Covington long before the agreement between Freudenberg and Fiber Visions.
All right, but let's assume it evolves into something that your client chooses to label T-196B. That's, in essence, an evolved, improved T-196, isn't it?
Well, the T-196 fiber is a fiber well known in the industry. When a company purchases T-196 fiber, manufacturer in Freudenberg's position knows what they're getting. It's not something that Fiber Visions cooked up in the lab to satisfy this contract. It was T-196 fiber that has various specifications for it.
Is it your position that once they picked the T-196, if they could never achieve the 400-meter standard, that was just too bad?
Well, I'm going to get to that point. The requirement to get to 400 meters per minute was in the contract under Section 5.1. They were supposed to get there as of July 1, 2003. The parties never got to July 1, 2003 because P&G, through no fault of anyone's, canceled the contract because they went somewhere else. They went to another product other than Top Sheet. What's very clear in the record below is that five revisions could never have gotten to 400 meters per minute because by Freudenberg's own admission, their equipment that they purchased, that Judge Silverman found could not do the job, could not run at even 300 meters per minute. And that was specifically testified to by Mr. Casey, who said that they could not get, because they could not get to the 300 meters per minute, they settled with the manufacturer because of that. They got money from the manufacturer of the equipment that they purchased alone, without fiber vision's input, that could not reach 300 meters per minute. They could not run their line at 300 meters per minute. So
the you mean with the T196 or with anything?
Well, that's where the Varda test comes into play. With the T196 fiber, they could not run, their equipment could not run at 300 meters per minute. Freudenberg held the equipment manufacturers accountable, saying it's your fault that we can't get to 300 meters per minute. And then, as recognized by the trial court at page 19, paragraph 65, after settling with the equipment manufacturers, in part because it could not run the line at the desired speed, Freudenberg no longer pursued the higher speed, and the equipment was satisfactory at the speed that we were running. That was a quote the court took from Mr. Casey's testimony. What he said was, our equipment would not let us get to 300 meters per minute, so we're giving up on speed. We're going to focus on quality, because P&G cared about quality. They could care less about how fast Freudenberg ran their line. They wanted good quality top sheet. So if you get to the actual merits of this, of the Section 5.1, it was an impossible provision. Not only was it moot because the date that they were required to get to 400 meters per minute, and remind you, only to use best efforts to get there, the contract with P&G was already gone.
Best efforts that would be required to get there would consist of what? Best efforts to work with the T196 product or any other product manufactured at Covington in order to get production up to 400 meters per minute?
To get, our position would be to use T196 fiber. That's what the party's contracted for. You can play a lot with T196 fiber.
Right,
there's a lot of criteria.
Fine, let's assume that. What, they have T196 and there's this clause in the contract that requires best efforts to improve it. What is a practical matter, what does that mean? Or what was it intended to mean?
Well, Freudenberg says it was nothing short of getting different fiber from Varda. The true meaning of the contract, and as Judge Silverman found, is that you had to work together to try to improve the fiber to be able to get Freudenberg to be able to run at 400 meters per minute. And that was, it could have been any number of things. They cite to whether the fiber was open, meaning was it fluffy. There's no criteria for fluffiness of a fiber. It was whether they could run their line, as quickly as they could to make more product.
So it involves some kind of a collaborative process?
Yes. And they worked together daily because, mind you, five revisions had every incentive to try to get the best and most product to Freudenberg, and so they wanted to sell it to them.
Your position is that product, for purposes of the improvements provision, meant a product manufactured at Covington, and specifically T196. The other side says no products is an open-ended term and presumably encompasses any product that was made by Fiber Visions. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Fiber Visions had an obligation under this provision to make its Varda product available, even if that meant manufacturing it at Covington. The response, as I understand it, is that's not a commercially reasonable interpretation of the contract.
That is not a commercially reasonable interpretation of
the
contract.
Is that your response?
Yes.
Okay. Talk about that for a minute.
That the Varda fiber was made from a different raw material, flake versus pellet. That had nothing to do with the quality of the fiber, but the plants were set up differently. There was no position. They continue to point to their contention that Varda fiber was better somehow. There's no proof to that. The court below found that the proof was not there, that the test was not scientific.
Okay, well, suppose it was better.
Then there would still be no obligation because that would not be commercially reasonable.
And why not?
Because the contract called for product to be made at Covington with possibility moving it to Athens, which is another Fiber Visions plant, with Procter & Gamble's approval. There was no situation that that allowed the parties to go to VARDA. And there was reasons for that. Five revisions would never have entered into a contract, such as they did with Freudenberg, that would have obligated them to go to another plant that was running at capacity and bring fiber at their own expense from Europe. The
was
cost would have been prohibited.
Was all that known at the time of the contracting?
Absolutely, because that's why the requirement was in that you had to produce fiber from Covington or Athens, both in Georgia. It wouldn't have been extra expense for fiber visions. For Freudenberg to suddenly come to this court and say, you had to go to VARDA in Europe and get fiber from an affiliated plant would have made no economic sense for fiber visions. That's why the VARDA plant was never an option in the contract, whereas getting material from the Athens plant was. And I just wanted to mention, because it's very alarming to me, and I only have 2 minutes left, is that Mr. Beatty said that the court erred in the VARDA fiber test, that he said that Mr. Pedersen was a Fiber Visions employee, not a Freudenberg employee. At page 30 of the opinion, at paragraph 107, it says, the manager of Fiber Visions Process Technology Group, Pedersen. Don Pedersen, Fiber Visions employee, was at the test. He said that Mr. Casey and Mr. Given, two Freudenberg employees, were at the test, and Mr. Pedersen wasn't there. He had no idea what he was talking about. Well, at paragraph 110 on page 30, the court said, furthermore, although Casey, who was not present for the trial run, so with all due respect, Mr. Beatty has his facts wrong. The VARDA test that the court below said was not valid, Mr. Pedersen was there, Mr. Casey was not. And the judge, evaluating the witnesses and the credibility of the witnesses, said that the VARDA test is not, there's no proof in the record that VARDA fiber was better. And that's something that this court, I believe, should accept, because the judge spent a good deal of time, and under our rules, that should be found. Even if you find that somehow there was a legal obligation to go to VARDA, as a factual matter, that wouldn't have made a bit of difference. And finally, as I said before, they could not get their equipment going to 300. How could Fiber Visions ever have gotten satisfied its best efforts obligation to go up to 400 meters per minute when Freudenberg's own equipment couldn't even reach 300?
Do you agree that your equipment could never reach 400?
No, Your Honor. And neither did the people from Freudenberg. They understood that in the situation in which they found themselves with the fiber problems that they never could, and they resigned themselves to slower speeds and making sure that they could fill the requirements necessary for P&G. With the proper fiber, they felt that they could operate as many lines in Europe were, at more than 400 meters per minute. A quick one. I have in my hands my copy of the judge's findings, and it says Freudenberg's Process Technology Group, Pedersen. I don't know what the problem is. There's no evidence in the record that Fiber Visions improved the fiber or did anything to it. There is an exhibit in the record on page, it's Plaintiff's Exhibit 1023, A206, which is the result of tests of the comparison of the Fiber Vision fiber and the VARDA fiber. And the nature of it is described by the Fiber Vision employee as to determine why the T196 staple fiber did not card as well as the VARDA fiber. And then there are reasons given for the difference, why the Fiber Vision fiber didn't work as well as the VARDA fiber. And at the end, it said that the major differences were, and it itemizes them and then says that those were due to the methods of finish that were applied at Fiber Vision's plant. And bless my soul, Your Honor, we were not stuck with the T196 fiber. Both the trial judge and the argument here suggest to you that you should believe we couldn't get out of the T-196 fiber no matter what. And if you couldn't make the T-196 operate at 400 meters per minute, too bad.
You assume you could get out of T-196. They say you couldn't get out of Georgia.
Couldn't get out of what?
Georgia. You had to either go to Covington or Athens. Pick a fiber, any fiber, but it had to either be from Athens or Covington. And how do you respond to that?
Excuse me, one moment.
Remember I told you at the very outset that everybody anticipated that the fiber would require work in order to make it operate at the proper speeds. If you look at 1.1, the very, very first article in the agreement, it talks about, quote, such other specifications the parties may agree upon in writing from time to time, especially in connection with the improvement of the products, a defined term, as provided for in Section 1.2 and Article 5 below specifications. And if you look at the whereas clauses on the first page, you'll see that products is a defined term. I have one last point I'd like to make, which I can do in 30 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you. If you go to, Your Honor, paragraph 5.1, you'll see the same thing. The product can be changed. The modifications can be approved in the specifications by the contracting parties. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court appreciates your arguments, and we're going to take this matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.
Thank you.